You're listening to the Intercoastal Podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Intercoastal Podcast. I'm Daquan Mickens, and for today's episode, we'll be talking to Linda Miller from the Friends of Honey Island. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Hey, thank you. Good to be here.
Look, we're glad to have you, and we're glad to talk about Honey Island and kind of get to know more about Honey Island. It's definitely one of our driving leaders in tourism. So we love Honey Island. And, you know, when people come to the area and visit, they're always like, oh, Honey Island, that's such a great place. So could you tell us a little bit more about the Friends of Honey Island and what you guys do?
Oh, yeah, sure. FOHI, as it's called, is a fully funded membership donation nonprofit organization. And we provide conservation and project assistance actually to the island, to some of their projects that they need to get done that they don't particularly have the funding for. We solicit our membership and our donations, and we, you know, provide some of that backup for them. This year, we celebrate 30 years as an organization. And the backstory actually is a group of friends who lived on St. Helena in the Dautau area and thought it might be nice to help the sea turtles who they had gotten to know and see on the island laying their nests back in 1993. So they actually got together a group of people, friends of Dautau, and that was the evolution of the sea turtle program that we see today, and also the Friends of Hunting Island group itself. No. So we kind of owe them for their thanks of, you know, insight and conservation aspects.
Yeah, that's really cool to see like a group of friends started this, you know, something, and it grew into an organization, and they want to give back and want to keep Hunting Island the island it is. And kind of it started out with a dream of, oh, let's protect the sea turtles. And then it grew into a project of, well, while we're protecting the sea turtles, let's protect the whole Hunting Island and show people, you know, what's here and why we need to keep it here.
Absolutely. It was super organic, and it was such a really good thing for them to get done. But more importantly, where it's gone and how it's blown up, you know, some of these original members are still around and they can't get over what has happened and how amazing, you know, the conservation work has been.
Yeah, that's really cool. And since we're talking about, you know, kind of the history of Hunting Island and how it began, could you tell us, you know, how, the history in between like then and now of how, you know, Hunting Island preserves the area and, you know, what they do?
Yeah, actually back in the 1700s, the Reynolds family owned the Hunting Island, or this particular barrier island, which was part of the Sea Islands. Mm-hmm. It was used as a local preserve for hunting of the plantation owners that lived on St. Helena. And it became, you know, synonymous as a sportsman's paradise. And that included, of course, Harbor, Fripp, St. Phillips, Pritchard's. And it was not until the Forestry Commission came in the 1940s that transferred the ownership of Hunting Island to South Carolina Department of Parks and Recreation, which is SCPRT, and that happened in 1967. So that was kind of the evolution of how it became a national park in from its actual origin. A lot of transfer of property through many, many different families from the 1700s until the mid-19th century. So it was pretty interesting to see that backstory.
Yeah, that is crazy, you know, how it changes hands and to become a state park. And not only is it just a state park, it's one of the most popular state parks in South Carolina, actually number one, as visited state parks go. A lot of people, I have friends from the upstate South Carolina, and they're, you know, always telling me how jealous they are that I live near Hunting Island. It's one of their favorite parks to visit. So I have friends with RVs who love to come out and camp because they think, you know, camping at a beach is unique and not many places offer that. So, and it's one of my wife's favorite places to go and visit, lay out. We try to go as much as we can. It's kind of hard with work and stuff and schedules kind of get in the way. But when we can, we're so lucky that we live at Hunting Island.
Oh, yeah. And we're so fortunate that it's just about 40 minutes of beautiful drive, one lane highway straight down, you know, through the coastal low country. It's a very, very pretty drive from Beaufort and actually from upstate from when people are coming into. We get an awful lot of people outside of Beaufort that come in. And it's difficult for us to track. We don't really have a tracking mechanism except for looking at license plates, mm-hmm. but we get a fairly large percentage of tourists that come through from elsewhere, North Carolina, Virginia, mm-hmm. obviously down Savannah, Georgia, they come in. But it's the single most popular state park in the system, the SCPRT system. So we get over 1 million visitors a year.
Yeah, that's good. It's definitely a driving force of not just Beaufort, but South Carolina, as far as state parks go.
Okay. Maybe if you'd like to hear the numbers, because this is kind of interesting for the viewers, I would imagine, mm-hmm. It's got 5,000 acres, this mm-hmm. barrier island of marsh and maritime forest with trails for hiking. There's 5 miles of pristine ocean beach, of which is open to the horses in the winter months. And we just ended a really epic season last month. We had enormous batches of equestrians coming down, traveling from everywhere, hauling their horses down there. And it's one of the most interesting attractions for so many of the visitors that come through. We have a saltwater lagoon, and I think Forrest Gump was filmed there. We had scenes from G.I. Jane there. It's such an interesting area. We hope that people can get over there and have a look at that. And it also produces an ocean inlet to include Little Hunting Island, mm-hmm. which right now has evolved through the erosion and ecology, but that's on the south end of the beach. And that's been getting an awful lot of popularity as well. Of course, the iconic Boneyard Beach, which was the cover of our Wild Island Nature book that we published last year. That's really interesting for the kids to come through, and it's just a natural playground, literally, of existing boneyard trees and, you know, driftwood that is really pretty much a art in itself. They finished a multi-million-dollar fishing pier in 2021, and it provides a really beautiful boardwalk for people to just go and visit and walk and feel the breeze. And of course, we have the iconic lighthouse, which was built in 1859, and it's the only lighthouse available for climbing 167 steps in the state of South Carolina. It's a major attraction. People really come in. This is where they want to get their Christmas photo. They bring their families. We have all sorts of people coming through all season long. It's beautiful. It is, though, presently under restoration and will reopen for climbing in a couple of years. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. We really, engineering came through and they wanted to do some big time preservation on it and restoration. So that's been initiated. So we're into about 1 year of that project already.
Okay.
There's 102 campsites. So your friends, and you're lucky to get a campsite if you can. It's really hard. People, there's like a whole website on Facebook that literally they swap out if people are leaving or they can't make it, mm-hmm. So it's kind of an organic area of campers. They just really, they all swap ideas and stuff like that. And then we put in 20, Friends of Hunting Island put in 25 rustic campsites, which are ocean pads mm-hmm. right there on the beach by the lighthouse. It's pretty amazing, or in the campground area, actually. And each pad is has a barbecue grill and a fire pit. Mm-hmm. And literally, you are under the stars on the ocean. And I think it's about $35 a night.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good deal.
That is a good deal.
Yeah.
Hunting Island does a great job of offering a multitude of different things you can do, whether it's, just camping out, if it's going out for the day or day trippers. Or if, you want to stay there for a couple days as well. So I really, appreciate what you guys do and what you guys help to offer Hunting Island and making Hunting Island the place it is.
Yeah. And actually, we've had a lot of fun, recommending hotel stays in Beaufort mm-hmm. for people that are coming through who don't know anything about it. A lot of conversation, a lot of people are sharing you know, good, their favorite hotel, things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's literally organic. It's all happening online. And it's really fun to watch. I can sit back and watch half the time and I'm like, wow, okay. there you go, Buford Inn. You just got like, you know, 5 more reservations for this weekend.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's a happening spot and people are really, really drawn to it.
Yeah, that's good. Hands helping hands. Everyone pitches in and we do it as a community. That's the best way.
That's what Buford is all about, right?
Yes, it is. So staying with like, you know, that community aspect, you know, and what Buford is all about, Hunting Island gets a lot of press, and on your website it says Hunting Island is named top 10 beaches from TripAdvisor. So one of the things I notice is the press that Hunting Island does get. It's in a lot of places. Everyone's like, oh, you have to stop at Hunting Island, whether it's Southern Living, it's USA Today. Can you talk about the press that Hunting Island gets and things that people can do there?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of hard to keep up with it all. We have a lot of, you know, bloggers, people mm-hmm. that are really out there formulating their own little blogs and their travel blogs and so forth. And they get in there unknown, when nobody knows they're in there actually writing up a big story until it's published. And it is really fascinating because it's such a wild island, you know, full of so many opportunities between the maritime forest and, as I said, the saltwater lagoon and, you know, you're, of course, your classic beach with beach umbrellas and dogs and kids and grandkids running around. But it's fluid, mm-hmm. you know, and every reporter that comes in, they have a different take on it, you know, or a different aspect of something that they're looking at. Coastal Expeditions does beautiful charters and on over to St. Phillip's Island,
yes,
which was acquired by the South Carolina State Parks, and it is under the Hunting Island regime. So we do participate in a lot of that press as well. And again, we get travel writers that come in from Montana, you know, and writing things up about it. They're kind of blown away. And yeah. It's mind blowing. You know, when you are there, it's another world.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing what, like I said, Hunting Island offers. So when people come in and they're like, oh, it's going to be like just another beach, and they get there and then they're like, wow, this isn't like a normal beach. One of my favorite things when my boss told me when I first started here about Hunting Island is when you turn around and you don't see those hotels and you don't see the Airbnbs right behind you, you literally see the preserved land and you see the trees and, like you said, the boneyard. You do not get that everywhere, especially in a popular beach location.
Yeah, it's definitely not Hilton Head.
Yeah.
The cool thing is, though, too, and I thought about that when I first got there, was, oh, okay, well, I'm just go get a hot dog or a hamburger or a soda or a milkshake or something. No food.
Yeah.
And that is the coolest thing. Mm-hmm. It really is. It forces people to pack that picnic lunch for the family,
yes.
Get down there, you know, hook up with their beach chairs or their fishing rods, and they're there for the day and they just sock it in. And I think that is most beaches, they're in and out. You go for a hamburger or something and, mm-hmm. you know, you're out there for about an hour and you leave. This is so different. It's so unique and so special. And I think that's what draws so many people to that kind of environment mm-hmm. and education. I see the parents teaching the kids, you know, what the shells are as they walk the beach and, you know, just the keen observation of the shorebirds that are flying around. Again, you know, we're their guests, and mm-hmm. so we get to occupy their space, and people are so, so good about that, and they get attached to it, and it becomes, you know, their thing, their repeat destination every year.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun.
Yeah. So I'll agree with you on, I like the aspect of Hunting Island. Like you said, there's different things you can do. Like when you're laying out, you'll see the dogs, or if you come later in the fall, you'll see the horses. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool to see groups of people riding down the beach, and it's still warm and comfortable. So you're not, you know, right on top of each other. Exactly. And that's what I like the most about Hunting Island is you can do everything can happen all together and not feel like you're clustered in a group or you're right on top of the person next to you. You can space out, feel like no one's near you, but then you can still see people playing with their dogs or mm-hmm. people and their kids having fun in the water. And it's not like other beaches when you're just clustered or you feel especially for me, I'm kind of claustrophobic. So when I'm in big groups, I kind of get small, but which is kind of hard for me to say because I'm such a big person. But yeah, it gives you that aspect of, I feel like I'm here
by
myself.
You're participating, but you're not.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Actually, that's a good point because COVID, when that came about, oh boy. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had more people. That was it. We were so busy. It was crazy because you could, you know, social distance and people were so respectful. But there's so much, as I said, 5 miles of beach.
Yes.
And you can just pick your spot and not be bothered or be bothered if you want.
Yes.
So, yeah, it is. It's not like your beach is out in California or in the Northeast. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's not the Jersey Shore.
So since we talked about Hunting Island being secluded and not like other beaches, what kind of animals can you find out on the beach?
Oh, boy. There is a plethora of wildlife. And again, they happen to participate or migrate into very different aspects of the entire beach. You know, in the maritime forest, you'll see foxes and mink, which is something that I didn't even know existed in, you know, the South.
Yeah.
Of course, the sea turtles and crustaceans, the ghost crabs, that's a real child pleaser. They love those. They're adorable.
Yeah.
And you've got deer and snakes and reptiles, and the shorebirds are just absolutely splendid. And with this now program that we're working with the Audubon of South Carolina on, we've identified a new nesting area on the north side of the beach. Mm-hmm. So what we have had the good fortune of watching and witnessing has been this nesting preserve. And we have, let's say, Wilson plovers and red knots and all these different type of birds that are actually banded now. They're coming through our beach. Mm-hmm. And so we get to send that information up to DNR. And it's so the education piece of that is also pretty remarkable as we, you know, identify some of these little natural preserves and habitats.
Yeah, and that's what makes the Nature Center such a great location, because you can go in there and find out the information, find out what all you can see at Hunting Island and get educated before actually going out there. I think it's a great way you can actually talk to actual naturalists out there. Mm-hmm. And the displays you guys have are really amazing.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you brought that up because thanks to the ATAC's work here that we were able to get a grant, and FOHI, Friends of Hunting Island, has also contributed $75,000 to it. So we're in the process right now of renovating the Nature Center and the interpretive classroom. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I was just out there yesterday. It's amazing what is going to be happening and the new exhibits that we are going to be putting up. We've got, let's see, about an 8-foot reptile wall that's going in, which will house the snakes and all sorts of critters. And then we're going to build out a cultural exhibit, which will talk about the Gullah Geechee community and you know, the habitat of St. Helena and what, again, just as you said, give the kids, you know, some sort of an understanding before they get out there. And when they're there, then they also like to go back and say, hey, we saw that and we did this and that kind of thing. So it serves a big, big purpose. And it's going to be serving an even bigger purpose now that we've expanded it and we're getting it, you know, kind of bringing more things in. On a side note, it's really funny. I was there yesterday and a whale, what was it? Part of a whale spine actually washed up on the beach.
Oh, wow.
In 2019. And it's a vertebrae.
Yeah.
And it's not very heavy. I couldn't believe it, but it's huge. Mm-hmm. And it just shows you the size of a whale. But it literally washed up on the beach.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, we don't have to go look for it or buy it. It's there.
It just washed up.
And so we're bringing it all back in and, you know, we work it, we fix it, we, you know, and then get it up on display.
That is
so
awesome.
So it's all being picked up off our shoreline.
Yeah, that's awesome. And that's great for kids, like you said, to see. And I'm glad you guys are expanding because the more knowledge and the more you guys have, the more people want to bring their kids and they want to stay and the more for them to do while they're here.
Absolutely, yes.
So staying on the topic of animals, I know it's sea turtle season. Could you talk about, you know, the sea turtles and kind of how that season works? I know when people come to the area, they see the cages and they're like, oh, what are the cages? And it's an amazing sight to see.
Yeah, it's pretty wild and hands-on too. The kids do look at it. They can watch it as they're walking by with their families. But the season kicks off May 1st, and right now we just have signed up 250 volunteers, mm-hmm. and we run these program. We run this on a daily basis. The teams are out there at 6:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. and that's when they start identifying where the nests were. Mamas come in and they lay their babies, they lay their nests in the evening under the moonlight. And so as early as we can get on the beach, 6:30, we get out there and investigate where these nests are. And so that's when you see these cages that are built around it. Mm-hmm. And that's to protect them from the raccoons or any of the, you know, wildlife that does come around. And so that's when the nest is identified. And the incubation period for a loggerhead is about 60 days. So depending on the sand and temperature in the nest. And one fun fact is the nest temperature actually determines a hatchling's sex. Eggs nesting at temperatures above 84 degrees Fahrenheit will be female, and the cooler temperatures will produce males. So for DNR and, you know, sea turtle, you know, wonky nerds, this is like really fun to see. And yeah. I think last year was our banner year. We had 175 nests. And because of the heat on the island, I believe the majority of that were females. And so we had friends down in Georgia saying, hey, come on, we need to produce the males because you guys are producing females. So it became a look, you know, kind of a thing because they had some hot temperatures down there as well.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Climate does have a, you know, a factor in what is produced.
Okay.
But the inventories, they run for the public, and those are a wonderful thing to witness. And they usually begin in late July, and they can run as late as October, which happened last year. We had them out there. It's very exciting for the little ones, the kids and the moms and the adults and everybody, grandma, mm-hmm. to watch that. And, you know, to see these little, let's say they could have one mama could produce 80 hatchlings, mm-hmm. little babies. And then to see them literally get out of their nests, they crawl out, they crawl in a group, they try to follow each other, and they head straight to the water. and they just, they know, they can smell it.
Yeah.
And they gravitate that way. And it's so organic. Again, the families, everybody lines up and they create a pathway for the hatchlings to go down to the water. Probably takes them all of about half hour to mm-hmm. make the water. And then there's cheering going on, and it's such a thing.
Yeah.
I recommend you guys get down there too, if you can, on one of these public inventories. We had the press down there last year mm-hmm. and they were crying. They were just like, whoa.
Yeah. It's an amazing sight to
cool
see.
Thing.
I've seen the videos, and just to see the little turtles, baby turtles crawling their way into the ocean to yeah. begin life. It's a remarkable sight. It's breathtaking.
So incredible, isn't it?
It yeah. is.
And then, you know, they go back in the water. Some make it, some don't. Nobody mm-hmm. really knows.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then they come back and they're doing the same thing yep. as a mama.
Yeah. I think it's a really good thing. And it's a must-see thing. At least once see it. And it's a really cool, like, eye-opening experience. Yeah. So talk to us about educational and volunteer opportunities that are available with Friends of Hunting Island.
Yeah, this year it's been really interesting. I became president in January. I was marketing director there for, I've been there for 4 years. So I was marketing, and then I had to focus this year. I put my focus, all the marketing efforts I was doing for the last 3 years, and I tried to drive it into, okay, what is our core group? What is our core responsibility, I guess you would call it? And so we kind of divided it up into 7 categories. So we have the Sea Turtle Conservation Program. We have this Shorebird Stewardship Program. We, of course, have the Lighthouse, where we have a lot of tours, and the docents come in and they handle that and help us with that. Mm-hmm. Our Environment Program is very big and well-received, and we have just instituted an Adopt a Stream, which we are participating with DHEC in, so that we provide a tidal saltwater assessment from the area, which is Johnson's Creek. Mm-hmm. And that information then goes out up to DHEC. So it's all about the environmental, you know, cause of what is the salinization of the water and how is this affecting, you know, what are the effects of it?
Okay.
It's pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And then we have construction, and our construction team is huge right now. And they're the ones that are banging out the Nature Center. Yeah. And they're having an awful lot of fun with that. And then events and education. We do the Pelican Plunge as our annual event every year. And that's really a blast. We had a very successful one this year. We had almost 1,000 people at the beach. And it was just really fun to watch everybody just jump in that water on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, it takes a special person to be able to willing to jump into a cold water and in December.
It cures their hangover, I think, too, so it's good.
Yeah, I think so. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Linda. We're glad you came to talk about the Friends of Hunting Island. Now, before we wrap up, here are a few events that we are having this month. As we're wrapping up March, we're heading right into the spring season, and on April 1st, the third annual community Easter egg hunt is presented by Port Royal Elementary School. It's a great way to get out, have some fun, candy, food, and games for kids, and have a chance to win some prizes. And then on April 3rd, the 8th annual golf tournament hosted by Port Royal Sound Foundation will be held. It's a great way to get out and play some golf. There's 18 holes. Registration ends March 27th. So get out, get some golf in, get some lunch, some cold beverages, and there's an auction as well. And the last event on our list is First Friday on April 7th. It's a great time to get out into the community. Everyone comes out, live music, get the kids out. It's a great way to unwind before the weekend really begins. So stop by, get out, and see the town of Beaufort and what Beaufort has to offer. Thank you all for listening to the Intercoastal Podcast. You can follow us on social media at @visit_BeaufortSC on Instagram or at @BeaufortSC on Facebook. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a review. We'll talk to you all next time. This has been another episode of the Intercoastal Podcast, hosted by Daquan Mickens and the team at Visit Beaufort, Port Royal, and the Sea Islands, produced by Relic.